Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. You're listening to me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. This week, we meet Toby Uredin, founder of Black women's media site Black Ballad, and we talk to Felicity Hayward, the body positivity campaigner, about why self-love really does equal beauty.
Across the UK, online and on DAB. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Femba can go to hell.
Fearless opinion and inspirational conversation on the hour of badass power.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
Now, did you know that 94% of the British media industry is white? When I think about everyone I know in the media industry, that makes complete sense, and I might have gone higher. But seeing the stats, a bit shocking. One woman who set out to change this is Toby Uredin, and she is the founder of Black Ballad, a website that... Give me the beautiful line you have on your website. Human experience.
Yeah, telling the human experience through the eyes of black women in Britain.
I absolutely love that. Telling the human experience through the eyes of black women in Britain. Toby, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, everyone. Thanks.
Tell us what for you was the moment that spurred you on to create the site?
Someone didn't give me a job.
I applied.
I was freelance and I applied for a few jobs, and then I applied for a magazine that targeted black women in Britain. And I didn't get the job. And I really thought I was qualified for the job. Like, in terms of my mentor at the time was like, you could do better than this. Like, why are you going to try and be an editorial assistant when you've been a features writer? And I was like, no, I just want stability. Like, I'm 22. Like, I'm out of uni. I want stability. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the job. And then the editor kind of was really dismissive. Like, she didn't read my CV. She didn't really read my application. And I just said, okay, I'm going to create something that's better.
Love that.
So that was the moment it kind of all clicked. But I think I kept complaining about the fact that, oh, you know, I've interned, I've had my first job, but nobody looks like me in the office. And in the pages, nobody looks like me. And if it's a black woman, she's more Beyonce than me. And there's mm-hmm. a huge difference. And I was like, it's just so weird. And then my friends kept telling me, like, if you really don't like it, then why don't you just do something about it? Mm-hmm. And I was like, ugh. You know, I don't really want to have my own thing. I just want to work for somebody. I want an easy life. So the moment I didn't get that job was the moment when I said, okay, I'm going to do it.
And what was it like the first few days when you made the decision and then you had to get that website up and running?
Said that in 2013, and we launched like eight months later in 2014. And I told as many people as possible, so I couldn't go back on it. So I was like, yeah. If I tell everybody and then it doesn't, you know, manifest, everyone's going to be kind of like, you just talk a lot. Like, so I was like, yeah. So then I got everybody on board. So all my friends that I thought were great writers, I got them on board like within a week. My boyfriend, who's now my husband, I said, oh, you know, you do digital marketing, so why don't you just do the social media part? And then why don't you be my co-founder and do all the things I don't want to do? And he was like, okay. And then he got his really good friend from school to design our first website. So like in the space of about 10 days, I'd kind of assembled a team. And over 8 months, we all kind of worked together as novices to create this like media brand. And that was it. 8 months later, we turned it out.
Incredible.
And so how did it go from actually not getting a job that you wanted to realizing more and more that black women were not represented in the media? Because I agree, I don't see many women that look like me walking around any media organization.
I think it was the fact of that when we had launched, black women of different ages and from like different parts of even the country kind of either emailed or said to me in person that, oh, this finally represents me. This is like a modern kind of, I don't want to say millennial, but like
millennial. Yeah.
Millennial brand. And I think that was the part when I said, okay, like when you're in like a brand or your company, it's kind of hard to change the culture. Mm-hmm. And I was still freelancing and I kind of realized that people weren't really ready to have that race conversation. And they were only willing to take it so far. And as black women, I think they wanted to take it deeper. Mm. They, you know, I get commissioned a lot to talk about race, but you know, sometimes you want to talk about sex, you want to talk about periods, you want to talk about politics, and your race has nothing to do with it. And the fact that people were just reading these things from a black female point of view, I just said, okay, I need to carry on. And here we are 4 years later.
And have you ever been tempted to go mainstream and go in-house into an organisation and change the culture from within? Because I think things have changed. In the last 2 years, people do understand intersectionality a bit more. You do see more black women on the front of publications, but also behind the scenes. It's not huge amounts, but it has changed in the time that you started Black Ballads to now.
Yeah. So I'm actually doing like a 2 day a week part-time thing at the BBC.
Okay.
Just because the department, you know, got in touch with me and said that, you know, we want to kind of diversify our content with the BBC and the digital department. And I went in for a meeting and they said, how would you feel about coming on board? And I said, well, you know, I can only do like 2 days a week because I'm also doing like doing my own platform. I'm kind of on this like accelerator program. So I said 2 days a week is like the max I can do. So I'm kind of in this department creating stories for black women at the BBC, which has been an amazing opportunity for me to kind of see also how a bigger, larger media company works, but also to kind of create stories that I think black women want to see and allies want to see from the point of view of black women.
Can you tell us a bit about your success stories? Because I know I work with you on the King's College Accelerator Programme, and we had a chat the other day and you were saying how you're finding this sort of media talent and some of them have gone on to have quite successful writing careers,
So there's two people. One girl started working at Black Ballad when she was like at college, just doing it in her spare time, and she's now a freelancer at the BBC. And that's literally just through, you know, us sitting together, creating stories, giving her a little bit of guidance on how to put something together. And now, you know, BBC call her back and be like, can you shift work? And that's great for her. And earlier this year, I commissioned a writer to write something on Love Island. And I remember she wrote it, she handed it in. I said, okay, we kind of need to talk about this. And it was a good piece, but I just knew there was something missing. And we kind of had this really great phone discussion. And since then, she's gone on to write 27 other pieces of freelance work for publications like Vice. And, you know, I saw her the other day at Black Girl Festival. And she was like, you were the first person to commission me. You were the first person that paid me. And I'm really grateful. And, like, I've gone on to write for other people. And I think that's brilliant.
Actually, talking about pay, because we've been talking about the gender pay gap and how women are not being paid between now and the end of the year. But that's also something that you do at Black Ballad. You pay all of your journalists, don't you?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think money for some reason is a touchy subject around women. And I think especially if you're a creative, people ask you to do so much for free. And I really wanted black women to be empowered to be like, if someone says to you, okay, can you write for free, to be like, well, no, I'm a paid journalist, I've written for Black Ballad and they paid me. So it's not just about paying because it's the right thing. It's I want to give women confidence. I want to give women, black women, the confidence to demand their coin that they deserve.
I love that. We are talking to Toby Oridan, founder of Black Ballad. We're going to keep talking to her after the break.
The Fempire strikes back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
We were talking about money and the importance of allowing women, particularly black women, to know that it's okay to ask for what you are owed. Toby, when you started out in your career, were you interning for free? Because this seems to be a big problem in the media, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was. And it actually caused huge problems at home with me and my mum.
Really? In what way?
Because I was interning for free for 6 months.
It's a long time.
That's a long time. Especially if you're living in London as well.
Yeah, and I didn't even get travel expenses.
Oh my.
Yeah, and
that's appalling.
I was doing my dissertation at the time, and then I was kind of writing for this magazine, and I even had my own columns in it. And my mum was like, "You're not doing the job of an intern. You're doing the job of like a part-time writer."
Yeah.
And all my friends were telling me like, "This isn't good." And I think it knocked my confidence, because when I first started freelancing, I would never ask for money. It sounds so weird. Like 4 years ago, I'd wait for someone to tell me the rate. And I learned a big lesson when someone said, "Oh no, we don't pay writers." And I remember I was like, yep, never again. So if anyone asks me to do anything, talk, write, I'm like, what's the fee? Like I feel no way about it. And like, if it's a no, I'm like, okay, well then, unless I feel really passionate about what someone's doing, I'm like, oh no.
Did you ever in those 6 months feel like you could ask for some sort of compensation, some expenses or anything?
No, I didn't feel so, because it was kind of like they kept saying that, you know, if you just keep working for free, there'll be something for you in the end. So it's kind of like a bit of string. And I think that's what a lot of interns do. I think they do it because they think something else is going to come out of it, but nothing, 99% of the time, nothing really does. And I think kind of that's been a problem, especially like in the media industry. And where everyone's working for free, it kind of makes it harder for anyone to get paid, if that makes sense.
And there's a big difference between working for free because you generally have no skills and you want to learn what goes on, but when you start actually contributing to the business and helping them to make money, it's absolutely not okay for those people to be paying you, is it?
And so you are really clear that you pay all your contributors. When you were setting up the business, was that something you wanted from the outset? Was it part of your business model? Did that work?
From the outside, we wanted to, but we couldn't because we were just a free access blog. And then about a year and a half in, it just got to the point where I was like kind of embarrassed to keep asking people to write, and the content was slowing down. And then we was like, how are we going to pay people? And then my husband suggested, I think we should go behind a paywall. I think we should do a membership. And I was like, nobody pays for content. Like, nobody does. And then my husband was like, but people should, you're doing a job, people should pay these people. And we had like a 2 month break, and then we came back with a crowdfund and we got people to pay for memberships, and we raised £11,000 in like 6 weeks. And then that was how we kind of funded our new website with the paywall. And then because people pay a monthly or annual fee of £4.99, £6.99 or £49 or £69, that's how we actually pay for all our writers and keep ourselves sustainable.
Because I think things have changed. People are willing to pay for content that they want, from the Times right through to extras on, you know, The Economist or whatever publication it is that you read. If it's something of value, you're willing to pay for it. And so recognizing that and putting that fee in place, and then also keep making it clear that that fee helps put that content online. Because I think that's what people forget. When you pay for something, you get value.
Yeah.
And if you don't see yourself represented in the media and you want that content, actually, you might have to pay for it, or we should be paying for it. So I think it was a bold business move on your part. I'm keen to know what comes next. Where are you taking the media empire to?
The media empire. We really want to make sure that Black businesses get exposure, because the point of media isn't just to tell stories, it's actually to advertise. And a lot of Black owned businesses, they don't have the money and the budgets of, you know, what your Cosmo or your Elle will charge for like a little kind of square on a page. So we have a directory, and if you pay your membership fee, you actually get access to I think 15 brands that give you discounts, and they're Black owned. So we kind of want to build that out and make sure we're giving people a holistic lifestyle experience. And then we'll be taking over Europe and hopefully the world.
I was looking at the site today, and I said to you before the show that there was a story that I loved, which is about a woman who had run away from home. What running away from home as a teenager taught her about being a parent.
Yeah.
What has been your favourite pieces of content that you've published?
Oh, we've ever published. There's one. One that I commissioned that I thought was really, really important was a few years ago. I commissioned a piece on the lack of Black staff in higher education. And it just got a real conversation going, and I thought it was really important. And I'm really proud of the conversation it started. When we went behind a paywall, I was really dedicated to health. And we have an amazing doctor who writes a lot of health, and she writes about, you know, black women more likely to die from breast cancer, get thyroids, and that's really important. And I think one other piece I'm really proud of, I didn't commission it, our other editor, Jendela Benson, did, and it was how black women don't show their identity when they're business women. Mm. So they will put maybe like a picture of a man or a white woman, and then when they go into meetings, they claim that they're the assistant, because they know that sometimes people don't want to work with black female business owners. And that was just a really interesting conversation, and it was just a piece that I knew you could would never be published anywhere else, because that's so kind of ordinary. I've heard that so many times. Yeah. And the fact that we put that on the website, and like people who are allies said, I never knew this. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were going to ask about co-founder.
Yes, yeah. I was. So your co-founder is your now husband.
Yes.
How is that? What's it like running a business with your spouse?
You know what? It's not, I think everyone thinks it's like really like, you know, crazy, but it's actually not. I think we have a clear division of labor. So when we're in the office, I'm the boss, and when we're at home, he's the boss. I'm super indecisive. Like, I'm that person that's really annoying. Like in a restaurant, like I changed my mind like three times.
When's your birthday?
Yeah.
When's your birthday?
It was last Friday, actually.
Are you a Libra?
No, I'm Scorpio.
Oh, just on the couch. Yeah. Just checking. Okay, anyway.
So yeah, like today I cooked two meals, like two whole
meals.
You
can decide what to eat.
And like, I still can't decide when I get home, what am I going to eat? But no, and I think he's really supportive. I think what's been interesting is that I think he's been able to see the sexism that exists in business. Mm-hmm. So people, especially if it's men, they talk to him, even though it's about a black woman's publication, and he has to do a lot of like, okay, Toby, you know, thinks this, or Toby started the brand. And I think that's been good because it's made those conversations easier for us, and he can see it himself.
But you saw them, so Emma, you saw them together. Did you know that they were husband and wife? Because no. I would think it's interesting when you see founders that are in relationships together, whether they're married or not, the dynamic they have when they're out.
I never clocked at all. Never clocked.
No. Yeah. When we're in the office, where...
Yeah, it was, yeah, business. Purely, you know, business, yeah.
I'm Toby Oriden. When I'm at home, I'm Toby Orney. Yeah. That's why.
But Black Ballad is your vision, your thing, really. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's really supportive in terms of bringing it to life. And I don't love doing, like, the kind of social media side and, okay, like, the kind of, you know... So he takes that on board and we join on the business side.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that you said right up front. You built a team. And yeah. I think lots of people that are building businesses forget that team bit. They think, oh, possibly I want to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And they think, you know, it's all about an island, one person going on this lone journey of pain. But actually, if you bring people together, yeah, and treat them well, amazing things happen. So how big's the team now, and what sort of things have you put in place to make sure that it works? Because that's the next hurdle.
So I would say the core team is three of us. So mm-hmm. Jendela Benson, she's our other editor. And then we have a pool of, like, I would say, like, now about consistently 50 freelancers that I can reach out to. But I've always had this thing. I think the biggest lesson I've learned in entrepreneurship is that I kind of believe you should be the least talented person on the team. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, if you want a great business, you should be collaborating with people that are better than you. Mm-hmm. And I always say that Jendela Benson, she's a much better writer than me. She's a much better editor than me. Mm-hmm. And I have no shame about that because she's brilliant. And I want to create a product that's not just good. I want to create the best product.
Yeah.
So I actually purposely go out of my way and be like, if you're a better writer than me, you should join our team. Or if you have, like, a skill set that I don't have, you should be on board. And I think that's why Black Ballad is growing the way it's growing, because I'm not afraid to kind of be like, oh, you're better than me. You should join me.
Yeah. Fabulous. I love that. Toby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If people want to find Black Ballad and learn more about it, where should they be looking?
Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. And it's Black Ballad UK. Ballad as in the song. There's no R.
Beautiful. And the website?
blackballad.co.uk.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Fempire strikes back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
In the studio, we have the fabulous Felicity Hayward. Welcome.
Hi, darling. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Felicity, you are wearing an incredible hoodie, which we've been talking about in the break, which says, "Self-love brings beauty." Tell us about that.
Well, I started this hashtag, this movement in 2015. Wow. I have been modelling as a plus-size model for the last 6 years and got scouted in an East London pub dancing to Diana Ross and got asked to do a shoot as Anna Nicole Smith. And that's been a nutshell.
What did you think when they asked you, do you want to come and do a shoot as Anna Nicole Smith?
I just thought, this is going to be really glamorous and my nan's going to love it. So I just thought it'd be amazing. And I've been modelling for the last 6 years, as I said, and it got to the point that every time someone would interview me, they'd always ask me about my health and my weight. And it started to just really, really bug me, because I'm like, if I was a size 8, you wouldn't be asking me how many times I've gone to the gym. And in my head, I was like, if I could inspire the people that are interviewing me to have self-love within themselves, they wouldn't push their insecurities on me and having to keep asking me about my weight, which has nothing to do with the campaign that we're talking about. Mm. So if these people understood that self-love brings beauty, we would stop so much ignorance in this industry.
I absolutely love this campaign, and it just totally speaks to my heart. But I wish that this is a personal question, but how old are you?
30.
So I probably learned that at about 30, and I wish that I had known it when I was in my mid-20s. Yeah. How did you come to have that level of kind of awareness, resilience and self-esteem so early on?
I think for me, it was my grandmother. So she has just been a rock throughout my whole life. And when I was younger, I think I used clothing as an armour. I come from a small town called Bury St Edmunds, and I was always the weirdo in my hometown. I always had big thighs, big bum, and I always used to dress like a punk. You know, I've always been that person, and my nan was such a rock for me in just telling me to be unapologetically myself. And I guess I had a bit of teenage rebellion, and I was like, I can wear this, I'm fine. And I feel I used that armour, used that clothing as armour until I kind of moved to London. I moved to London when I was 17, so, and I went to university, and I feel like when I got here, I just found all the weirdos from all the small hometowns, and I was like, hey, we're all here, and actually, like, we can be ourselves here. And I feel like that's when, like, my confidence really bloomed, when I was about 18, and just having that, like, I didn't really care what others thought. And I think that's such a big thing as women, and the way that the media portrays bodies in this industry is, it's so tough for young women to be confident in themselves. And I think that's, you know, another reason why I started Self Love with Beauty, because I was like, if we can kind of make sure that the young girls and boys understand how amazing they are at an early age, and to not listen to the pressures that people put on us.
Yeah. So I agree with you. But I think it's going to be really hard, because I think we'll start to see over the next couple of years, there are going to be more and more campaigns that talk about childhood obesity. So we can all stand up and say, love yourself as you are. And they're going to get a completely conflicting message in school from the media through their parents about obesity. And we all know those scales they really need to look at the scales of obesity and everything else, because you're probably telling a child that it's absolutely fine, they're obese. How do you do both? How do you campaign and build confidence and self-love whilst recognising that structurally within society, there are messages that are telling him exactly the opposite?
I think the problem we have is telling people that are overweight and young children that are overweight that it's the worst thing in the world, and the way that people use the word fat as such an aggressive and awful word. Children and adults are never going to change and want to lose weight for their health or for whatever reasons if they don't love themselves first. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go into the gym if you're not happy with at least 10-15% of yourself. So I want to be in a position where I'm like, you need to understand how beautiful and how amazing you are as a person. And once you find that, you can make the changes that are your decisions, whether the doctor wants to tell you to lose weight or your family or whoever. It's your decision. Mm. I'm not a doctor, you know, and I understand that there is an obesity crisis. But for me, I just want to make sure that everyone knows their value and their worth for whatever size they are, and then if they choose to make a decision, that's their choice.
Going back to what you were saying, whenever you were interviewed, people would always ask you about your health, but you're right, they are not asking size 8 models, but we all know that you just because you're a size 8, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are healthy either. So you can be whatever size you are, that doesn't mean you're an unhealthy person, is it? So I think, you know, you're right in terms of that self-love and getting people to,
and let's add mentally healthy into that as well, because I think we always bring it down to the physical, but it's about the whole being. So just on that point, my granddad is, you know, he used to be sort of quite a tall strapping man, and as he's got older he's become smaller and slightly shorter. The doctor told him he was obese, and that's what I mean, it's just that he needed to lose weight, and we were like, his in our eyes, he's tiny, but on the scale of what older people should be, he wasn't necessarily small enough. And so I think there is just, no matter where, there's an odd narrative that's coming through, sometimes through either medical guidance, and it's filtering through because of sugar campaigns.
Yeah.
And it's hard to navigate. But what you said there for me was that self-love bit means you know how to hear the messages wherever they come from, and you know what to do with them.
And also, like, the BMI is such an outdated,
that's what they did it off,
you know, because I did something on this a while ago, and I think it's such an outdated, if someone is working, like, for example, an England rugby player, huge, stocky, really heavy, is going to be classed as definitely morbidly obese. He's playing rugby for England. He's healthy. It's like insane. And the one thing that I also don't like about the BMI scale is you have underweight, normal, overweight, morbidly obese. You don't have morbidly underweight.
You equally can be, right?
Which you can be. It's always, if you're bigger, you are the devil.
So is that not part of the campaign then?
Well, there's a weird thing around size, which means that it's somehow ethically and morally better to be underweight than overweight. So there is a moral a moral failing put on you if you are overweight, that you are somehow a person that has done something so wrong that society just doesn't even want to deal with you. And that's in our language, in how we deal with people, in the fact that we pay people who are overweight less than we do people who are significantly thinner. It's a very weird concept that we have around size in this world. How did you find that, particularly in the fashion industry? Because is it changing? I mean, it's definitely different now than it was, but deep down, is it changing?
Baby steps. Baby steps, it is changing, but within the last 6 years, when I started, I was an editorial girl. So I was kind of used as a little bit of, there's a curvy girl, and she got shot with the right person, and she's flavour of the month. And then, because there wasn't that many brands doing it, whereas now a lot of brands are breaching, you know, doing plus size. So there has been, like, people are understanding, like, there is a need for it.
What do you think about the term plus size, though? Do you think we should be having, you know, a lot of brands have separate ranges, yeah. don't they? Do you think we should be having separate ranges, or do you think we should just be broadening sizes?
I mean, that would be the ideal, that, you know, you have a teenage girl going shopping with her girl gang and them all being able to buy the same jacket. Mm. That would be the dream. But I mean, the term plus size, it's weird because a lot of women have taken it and made it such a positive, empowering word. And they've taken it upon themselves and just like, I am plus size and I am proud. But at the same time, we don't have minus size.
No. Yeah.
So it's just, again, it's a weird one to answer because the way that I see the word plus size and the way I see like my friends and followers and people online use the term, it is in a positive way.
Mm. Yeah.
But you can definitely hear it when someone says it in a negative way. And that's when you're like, oh, minus size too.
Yeah. What did you think this week of the Victoria's Secret CEO defending the fact that there were no plus size or even, you know, I would say negative in a little bit size models on the Victoria's Secret catwalk because it's a fantasy and we want to protect the fantasy of this incredible, beautiful, sexy women. What were your views on that?
The women at Victoria's Secret are beautiful.
Super beautiful. Of course
they're
beautiful,
but yeah. Every woman is beautiful.
They are, but that's the training regime they go through to do a fashion show is intense. Like, it's like a weightlifter would go through.
I did a Simply Be We Are All Angels campaign this week.
I saw it on your Twitter feed.
Cool. Yeah, for us that was... yeah, just trying to show that actually all body sizes can be angels and all body sizes are worthy. And I don't want it to be, you know, I don't want to sit here and say that those girls that do Victoria's Secrets are any different because they were all women. But it doesn't help that they don't show anyone over a size 6 because yeah. It's young girls that are going into these stores like...
Well, they've lost loads of money. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I was like, Victoria's Secret, they're, you know... They're in massive financial trouble, so...
Are they?
Apparently so, yeah. Declining profits.
Yeah, so and I think this is where brands sort of start to change, when it hits them in the pocket.
Mm.
And whether it's Victoria's Secrets or other brands that, you know, over time just aren't relevant because they are not speaking to most women, that's when they start to change. But the change comes too late and then it almost feels insincere, especially when you've got the chief marketing officer making comments like that. If yeah. next year they suddenly change the catwalk, actually it's a bit tokenistic.
Do you think he might have said them though to get press?
To get some press, possibly.
No, because they've then, you know, released a statement. He's the sort of man who he just said it.
Yeah.
He said it. He was like, it's all about the fantasy. He likes being surrounded by... You know, super tall. He's a short man, super tall, thin
and
women.
And it is male fantasy.
Naked. It is yeah. his fantasy. It's yeah. probably what he thinks about all of the time. So, no, it wasn't a let's be smart about this one.
I love the concept that self-love brings beauty. But if you are somebody who's sitting at home listening to this right now and you're not feeling that level of self-love, what are some steps that you can take to maybe just feel a bit better about yourself and put the attention back on yourself?
I think just taking some time off, especially from social media. Mm-hmm. Like last Sunday, I was off social media for 10 hours and it was actual bliss. And I think just making sure you spend time for yourself, whether it's like making a playlist, running a bath, like ignoring your emails, ignoring your phone, and not feeling the pressure all the time. Because I feel like we all feel pressures like constantly of just like having to answer back, having to comment back, post.
Yeah.
You know, and I think also self-love isn't something that happens overnight. And I think also people think that it's something that can just be you snap your fingers, you wear a hoodie and it's not that yeah. at all. Like, surround yourself with people that love you and not people that are going to just constantly drain you, because that's not going to make any.
But I think also self-love, you need to understand where you are in that self-love spectrum. Some people can't do the self-love because they need therapy. It's okay, go to therapy. I love me some therapy. It helps you get closer to the self-love. So I think yeah. people need to understand where they are on that spectrum. If for some people it is do a detox, surround yourself with friends, but you're probably in a good place if that's yeah. how you reach self-love. And so, you know, I'm being really honest with lots of young girls that I meet now.
sometimes you have to think about going one level deeper and having therapy and, you know, or CBT, or, and most schools provide these services. Actually do the work now, because I think it's the one thing, you know, what's the one thing you tell your younger self? It's like, go and have therapy. And when you don't need therapy, have coaching. Mm. And when the coaching doesn't work, you probably need some therapy. And it, that's how you get through life as an adult. That's my lesson, yeah, in adulting.
I'm doing it all, isn't it?
And then I can do the self-love. Yeah. Then I can happily sit on the sofa in my pants and eat a whole bag of kettle chips and know it's absolutely fine, because, you know, I'm not in a dangerous place of self-harm, because the self-love is there.
Yeah. I'd say there's also something about, look at who you're following on social media. So yeah, one thing, God, I wish I had had when I was 16 and a size 16 and just thought that my body was desperately wrong, and if only I could change it in some way, shape or form, life would be magically better. I wish that I had been able to see people who were my size, mm, looking fabulous, yeah, having great lives, loving themselves. It would have, I mean, it, well, for a start, it would have knocked off about 3 years of therapy. Mm. I think who you follow, surround yourself by people who inspire and look like you as you are now, mm, not the you you think you're going to be in your head post-diet.
Is it hard? It's hard to self-police yourself, though, isn't it? Sometimes, I think, on social media, because those people are there, right? We can curate our social media with all, yeah, the people that, you know, do support a, you know, a good mental state. But there are just lots of people that are just fascinating that don't support our mental state. It's very hard to self-police, I think.
It is. It's a lesson growing up, I think. Felicity, you have been a delight to have in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank
if
you,
people
ladies
want to follow you, which I thoroughly recommend, where can they find you?
Twitter and Instagram, just at Felicity Hayward, or Self Love Brings Beauty on Instagram.
It's a beautiful account. It's only going to make your day better. Go follow it immediately. Thank you so much for joining us. 1, 2, 3, 4 This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.